Hi, I'm George.
I'm Dan.
I'm Rick.
And we are Queer Magnolias,
the podcast.
Each episode, we're going to talk about what it was like growing up gay in the South.
The trials and the tribulations.
The joy and the struggle.
And more importantly, how we became who we are today.
So join us for an all-you-can-eat buffet of cutting up.
Foolishness and carrying on.
Always served with a heaping helping of sass.
And that's a Queer Magnolias guarantee.
Welcome back, y'all.
Hi.
Hi.
Today we're going to talk about something that's really, really deep and close and personal to my heart, and that's porn.
I've been so excited for this episode all weekend. Pardon the pun.
Yeah, we don't want to see your excitement, dear. I mean, thank you for the offer.
I mean, I feel like we've all done a lot of research in our entire lives for this topic.
I mean, I think that, you know, our entire lives have led to this moment.
I mean, right? We are.
I mean, most of my imagined boyfriends came from that world.
Well,
so,
you know, they got to come from somewhere, honey.
They've got to come from somewhere. Oh, my gosh. I know that when I first turned 16 and was able to drive, there were a few adult bookstores or theaters within driving distance. So it certainly has been something that has been on my radar for a long time. I mean, back in the old days at Mammoth Mart and Nichols, you could actually buy some gay magazines, Playboy, Penthouse, obviously, but sometimes Honcho or Inches or Hustler and all kinds of things, you know.
But so that's a curious question for me. So then the first time you ever saw porn, or was you were 16?
Oh, probably about 13 or 14. You know, some of these
I have an older brother, so I was definitely younger.
Right?
Right. And I do think that's something else, too. Because so in the 70s, I know porn was sort of becoming a little more mainstream. It wasn't quite the kind of stuff that was hidden behind a brown paper wrapper that it had been before.
No, thanks to Deep Throat, which everyday people went to see that movie because it was so publicized.
Right.
Was indeed.
But it's interesting you say that, because in prepping for this episode, obviously I did a little deep dive.
As you do.
As one does. And do you know when the first porn was ever made?
Mm-mm. I do not.
So the very first porn ever made was made in France in 1896. There's not much of that film that exists. There are some little clips and stuff, but it was actually a striptease porn. Wasn't really hardcore porn. But I guess it would probably be more classified as erotica today.
But girl, at the time,
yeah, it was probably very shocking for the French, I'm sure.
It was art house nouveau darling.
Yes. I love Of course, with human beings, you give them technology, the first thing they're going to do is take their clothes off.
But you know, if you think about that, though, we're talking about the late 1800s. I mean, Hollywood wasn't even in existence at that time. So you're talking about taking film in its infancy. And here in France, they did a little ooh la la, let's make it a little more salacious.
Right. And it took them actually 12 years to make the first hardcore porn, which was in 1908, but also in France. So the French are all over it, honey.
All français.
Amour. Amour.
Right. Oui, oui. Exactly. Oh, no, that was later. Sorry.
Well, yeah.
Different kind.
It was in the 1920s. Sorry, I'm not going to turn this into a book report, I promise. It was in the 1920s is actually when the morality police took over and porn moved to become more underground back then. And it's had its heyday for sure, but I think it's sort of lived underground for a very long time until you get to like the 60s and the 70s. And then there's just this explosion of porn.
You know, it's the fault of rock and roll. You know, they went to Woodstock, the they took their clothes off. It all goes back to rock and roll.
Okay, Donna Reed, calm down.
You know, a fun thing about, well, not necessarily a fun thing, but something to think about, though, is how some people are very free at expressing themselves. with sexuality, with pornography, what have you. And then some people are just so frightened by it that they pass all these laws and you can't do this and you can't do that. And I, you know, we're trying to be a live and let live society, but I think we still got a long ways to go.
Well, I mean, I don't know that all of our society is trying to be live and let live. I think a lot of them are trying to be I'm going to live, I'm going to dictate how you should live.
Yeah. Well, yes. And there again, it still sucks like that. No pun intended.
Speaking of sucking, I feel like there was this amazing, glamorous heyday of porn ops, like we talked about, like the 70s, when, like, you know, they would have like actual premieres of films that like were attended, like the press would show up. I mean, clearly it was like the underground press, but still, like, it was a big thing. Like, it was a big thing. And then the 80s and like even the 90s, and now it just doesn't exist like that. Like, the idea of like studio porn obviously is sort of, I don't even know if it's still alive. Maybe it is.
I think a lot of that is because in the 70s, porn was shot on film, right?
Right.
And you come into the 80s, and that's when, you know, and then also in the 70s, there's, you know, film can only be seen in movie theaters. But it's not until the 80s, like the mid 80s, that the invention of the VCR and, you know, you're able to actually bring movies into the home. And that's when the video VCR porn business sort of,
yes,
the video store exploded.
The back room of the video store, honey.
Did you ever find your scarf?
No, I did not. Thank you. But you know, when I was young, and there were some adult bookstores not far from where I grew up in Eastern North Carolina. Let's just call the devil on out. In some of those very, very tight Bible strict areas, there was a lot of porn. But the first places I went to, they actually showed on movie theaters, a movie projector, because the VCR had not been invented yet. And or maybe it had been invented, it just hadn't quite made it to all of these adult places.
Well, there's little video booths, right? Where you go in and put in a quarter or whatever it was,
yep.
Or a token.
Yes, yes.
How many minutes do you get for that? Like one,
two, no, two usually, I think. I mean, I read about it somewhere. I said, how was that? I will share it. This is the funniest. There used to be a place in downtown Raleigh. It was next to CC's.
Yes.
And there were booths where you could go in, but between the booths, there were holes cut the size of a Mack truck. So basically, you had a block party. As long as people were playing, it keep dropping tokens or coins or whatever.
Bring a little TV tray in there and set it down and have a little party.
These booths had like Barca loungers. Like, I'm not sitting on that. And some of these were cloth. I'm like, no, that's girl. Just wrong. But the fact that you could crawl from booth to booth is just hysterical to me. I'm like, it was, everyone had an opportunity. Let's put it that way.
Girl, it's the Naga hide of it all for me.
And that's where I met Preacher Randy.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, Lord, I tell you, those were the days, my friends.
Well, I don't think we could talk about the early days of porn without talking about Andy Warhol's blowjob from 1964. Are you familiar with this movie?
I'm not.
I feel like it's one of his very first films, and it literally, that's all it is.
Yeah, it's just, exactly. It's somebody getting a blowjob on
and
film.
I don't, if I'm correct, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Rick, but I don't think you actually see it. I think it's all just it's the guy
it's
who's
the
receiving
guy's face.
It.
Yep.
From, yeah, yeah. You don't see what is happening, but it's what's really happening.
It's very clear what's happening.
I guess it was that, it was simulated porn. How's that?
So. No, it was real.
Oh,
what was
okay.
happening was very real. You just don't see the action. You see the reaction. And that's the art of it all.
Yeah, because that's when he had his warehouse studio where, you know, just throngs of people in New York would sort of hang out in these spaces and they just had a great time.
Factory.
Those were the days. Or that factory, right. Yes. Those were the days.
And remind me, is Joe D'Alessandro in Blowjob?
No, it was Devrin, I think. Devrin? I don't know. I'd have to look it up. So where's Jake? Jake, look it up.
Because, girl,
Devrin or something like that.
There is no beauty that really compares with young Joe D'Alessandro.
Right.
Oh,
he carried it into his older ages as well, too. So he's still a good looking guy.
Yeah, some people think Iggy Pop still looks good. I beg to differ.
Yeah, Iggy Pop is something else. Mm-mm. Yeah, it is funny though, because you know, it gives such a different impression. You know, when John Holmes was first out and was, you know, he was hung and the whole nine yards, but you know, then people began to compare. Well, very few people in the world are like he was. There have been plenty more bigger since, but he was like he was the king of it all.
The anomaly.
But all of a sudden, everyone thinks that that's what everybody should look like. It is not what everyone looks like by far.
Well, and then, I mean, we could get into that side of the conversation. I don't know that I want to today, you know, but what does porn do to our expectations in the real world?
Of course, there's that. I mean, I don't know if we want to get heavy, if we want to keep it light. But, you know, then you get people like Ron Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
So unattractive. Like, just like, I'm sorry, girl.
There's you nothing are, happening.
He wouldn't. Even
but so famous.
On, yeah, well, so early on, so Ron was one of the few people who took control of his career, and he controlled it really well for a long time. And so he would, you know, he was very girthy, a lot wider than John Holmes. And so he
controlled. Do you mean around the waist or do you mean around the other
parts? That didn't come until later. So he just, you know, it was one of those things that he controlled his career. What was the movie, the John Holmes movie, Boogie Nights? If you watch that, you really see how very little control John Holmes had of anything about his own self. And that's why Ron was so popular. But I will tell you, I saw Ron about the time the allegations have been made against him. And I'm here to tell you, I saw him and another fella and a woman having lunch one day in Hollywood, and he scared the shit out of me, and I wasn't having lunch with him.
Girl, same. I saw him once at Cantor's on Fairfax. He came out with on dirty sweatpants and Crocs, and I was there we go. Mm-hmm. There we go. Mm-hmm.
I saw him in a nightclub on Sunset one night, and I was like, I mean, he's just surrounded by this harem, and I'm like, I don't understand. How do you pull that? I get it. There's the notoriety, there's all of that stuff, right?
Well, the big dick energy of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I also think I'm alleging here. Uh-huh. I'm also assuming it's a lot of drugs as well. So a lot of famous people would hang out with him and bring the party goods because that would attract the women. And that's a great deal of what the lawsuits against him are about.
Oh, I see.
You know? And so the same with Phil Spector was the same way. I mean, Phil Spector was a train wreck, but he always managed to have people around him because of what they thought they would get out of it.
That's true. That's very true.
Grow that hair. That hair.
I mean, only what's Ron Howard's business partner? Only Brian, whatever his name is, could pull that hair off.
See.
So what about the first gay film? Do you know when that was? Anybody know when that was made?
I'm going to guess.
Sorry, you know I study film history, so here we go.
You do.
I studied it a lot, too, but nobody paid me.
I'm going to guess it was probably like the 50s or the 60s. I'm going to say like the late 50s.
Late 60s, actually.
Oh, so, I'm way wrong. Oh, film. I mean,
Well, I mean, if you go back to photography, actually, 1945, Bob Meiser was the first person to take photos. And he did that particularly for the gay community and gay men. But the actual first gay film wasn't produced until the 1960s with the introduction of the 16mm camera, which was a much lighter camera and it allowed for a lot more flexibility. So you could actually go underground, so to speak, and, you know, go from house to house and place to place and make those little movies. Run down the streets of New York City.
Running down the streets. So what was the first film? Do you know what the title was?
Actually, that I don't know. So,
well, Rick has more homework after the episode.
We'll go find that out. Actually, yes.
We'll have to post something on social with it once we find it.
I'm sure it has a very intricate plot.
I saw a meme recently that said the worst thing about gay porn was the fact that it gave people an expectation that the plumber might arrive on time.
Yeah, there you go. All right, I have it right here. The very first film that seems to, well, they say that was probably the influence of further gay pornography was Kenneth Anger's Scorpio Rising in 1963.
Oh. Mm.
Or Kenneth Paul Anger. Morrissey's Flesh in 1968.
And I Paul Morrissey. And Paul Morrissey was with Factory, so he was with Andy Warhol. Yep. And Flesh is Joe D'Alessandro's in that movie.
Well, there we go. See? Yes.
Yeah, and that
I think we need a screening of that.
I mean, girl, get out. break out the screen. Let's do it.
So Flesh was one of those that I have heard of quite a bit. So, you know, that's one of those that sort of became mainstream. You mentioned the Meisner. His magazine was called Physique. And while it attracted a huge gay following, he was a bodybuilder worshiper.
Yeah. I mean,
he put out this magazine about bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And the hundreds of thousands of people that bought it for the bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the back of the magazine, you could order steroids, what were illegal at the time and stuff. And, you know, now we have back pages, or we used to with some gay magazines that don't exist anymore. But it's like, it really has become more mainstream. I remember going to Goldsboro, North Carolina one time, and there was like an old bookshop that sold used books and stuff. And around the top cornice were all of these Physique magazines that I think to myself, they must be worth a fortune.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I bet they are.
There had to be 200 of them. Wow. I was like, holy cow.
And what were they selling them for? Like a dollar each?
Probably, you know. Or maybe he wasn't even selling them. But there again, I think Little Goldsboro, North Carolina. Uh-huh. Who'd have thunk it?
The devil you know, honey.
I think I told the story in the shopping episode about the store in Mayberry Mall that had Honcho and Inches in the jean store. And I was like, what? I can buy my jeans and my porn?
You're like, are you guys taking applications? Because I could work here.
I need a summer job. Yes.
I need to check the inventory. I'll be back in a minute.
Exactly. It's crazy.
Well, you know, one thing is it has become very, it is, as George was saying earlier, it's very different nowadays. I mean, you can get it on your phone, you can get it on your tablet, you can get it on your computer.
Well, the move to digital, for sure, definitely changed how porn was made and how it's distributed and also how it's accessed, And
that's the thing. It's like, not only can you get it on your phone, you can make it on your phone. Yes.
There is that.
I have a folder that's locked so you bitches can't get in it.
See, you don't need a Polaroid and a Naugahyde chair in Washington, D.C. like I had to have back in the day.
Oh, I forgot about that photo shoot.
Oh, yeah, Lord. I've tried to.
You still have those Polaroids?
You have so many photos from the past, but yet we've never seen those.
No, well, you know, they don't burble to the top very often.
They just don't. So funny about that.
Well, you know, and so talking about that, you know, so the invention of the Polaroid camera was so popular among people who wanted to take photos of nudes and stuff because you didn't have to go to the photo mat. And in a lot of states, if you took a roll of film to be processed and there was any kind of nudity, they could report you and you could be arrested because this person was developing. Uh-oh. Is that why you can't go back to Alabama, Rick?
Uh-huh. Chattanooga, honey.
No, there was in a very early relationship I had, there were a bunch of photos that we took on a roll of film that we could only take to a certain place because we had a friend that worked there to develop them. So, yeah.
But yeah, I guess
North Carolina was one of those. North Carolina was one of those places where you can't. They whether they report you or not, if they know your family, they'll tell them right away.
Of course. So. Yeah. I guess your dad burned those photos too, didn't he, dear? Because we didn't see those either.
No, I don't know that they exist anymore, but I can't be sure.
This is why it's always good to know someone who works at Car Drugs.
And hopefully they have just a little bit of sugar in their tank.
It's so safe.
They're on our side.
But you're right. Like now you, of course, like OnlyFans and all the rest that go along with that. Like, you know, you don't have to be with a studio. You don't have to have a name. You don't have to be particularly attractive. You can make your own career from home with your phone and you can make money.
And anything goes. There's a market. There's a community and a market for anything when it comes to porn these days. It's kind of crazy. It's insane.
It's true.
I mean, it's I applaud it. I applaud the sexual freedom of it all. But yeah, it's really kind of blown up and become a completely different world than it was when we were growing up.
I will share a little story with you. I don't know if I've ever shared this on the podcast. So I was in college.
Pay attention, y'all. Write this shit down.
Uh-huh. It may be the only story Dan hasn't told yet.
It's a fresh take. Fresh take.
It was around the same time of the garden tub. But I was living there in the trailer, and I ordered a film from Falcon in San Francisco. And back then, you called and... I actually think, and I'm being serious, I actually think I ordered it, but I had to send a check for it.
As one does.
Yeah, because, you know, there was a lot of things about credit cards and stuff like that. So I may just not have had one. Anyway, the guy that took the call was very nice, and I called an 800 number, and he asked me for my number, and I gave it to him. So every now and then, we would chat. The movie came in the mail, and it was exactly what I wanted. I was very happy with it. And he kept trying to get me to send photos. And I'm like, we just chatted. Well, you know, I want to know what you look like when we're talking. And, you know, he was so fishing for their next person to be in a film.
Oh, yes.
And I was too naive to know, seriously. And I don't know, I probably sent him an Olin Mills photo. Y'all remember those Olin Mills photos? Those see the light of day often.
You know, I'm picturing what? The autumnal uh-huh. background with yes. the perm.
It might have been the curly hair.
That's funny.
You know, he was
the diffused lighting, the whole thing.
Right. All of a sudden, he was not available for my phone calls when I called back. Because I kept saying to him. I kept saying, I'm not interested in doing that. Oh, that's not what I want. It was totally what he wanted.
He's going to get some dumb farm boy from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you've reminded me of a story. There was a time on the East Coast, I was in a club, and there was a porn star. I know exactly who it was, Ryan Idle. Who had come to this club and he was performing. And so afterwards he was doing, autographs and this whole thing. And I was like, so what if I actually want to be in porn? How does one do that? How does one start this career? And so he get on the back of his photo. He turns around, he turns it over and he writes down his agent's number and his name and the address and all this stuff. And he's like, you call this guy, call him tomorrow and tell him that I told you to call. And I was like, shit, I almost called, but I ended up not calling. I chickened out, but I was like, I was this close.
Oh, you could have been. Could have been, honey.
You know, if Ryan had not passed on, I would ask him if you did a little movie with him to see, you know.
Or if the story's true.
Right. The story is definitely true. I don't think I have the photo anymore, but I also have a Joey Stefano story.
Oh, I was just thinking of Joey Stefano. Oh,
I loved Joey.
Everyone loved Joey.
Yes. Absolutely adored that man, and it's saying it's pretty much the same story as with Ryan Idle. They come through town or whatever, and we actually ended up talking for a couple hours, just kind of hanging out, and he just was just absolutely adorable. I probably could have fallen head over heels for him. So he's really cute.
I think a lot of people, you know, that was his big thing. I mean, he was always friendly, you know, his little part in the movies and stuff. But a lot of people, when they met him in person, he was really just that down to earth and nice and
very genuine.
Yes. And adorably cute.
So let's talk about that. Who were some of your favorites? I guess we're talking studio porn back in the day, or I don't know, maybe some favorites from today. Who do you like today?
I think one I was probably obsessed about, and I don't think it's pretty much at the time. I came upon him later, was Chad Douglas. And there was just something about that leather-esque kind of masculine mustache. That whole look just kind of did it for me. I was a big fan of his. And I think it was mostly popular in what, the 70s and 80s. I don't know if that's true. I should probably look it up. But
early 80s,
I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of Colby Keller. I'm not was. I still am. Do you guys know him?
I don't, but I can look him up.
You should look him up. He is so cute. And I think it's the same thing with like the Joey Stefano, where it's like, he just looks like the nicest guy.
Yep.
But then he can also just lay it down so hard.
Oh my gosh. Yes, there is that too, you know. And I think I love the fact that some people endure a lot longer as far as a career goes, and some that come and burn out quickly. And it's understandable because I think it's a tough career. One fellow who used to do porn, who's out of the business now, he's like, you know, it's an all-consuming business. He's like, there's never a moment when you're not expected to be on or ready. And he's like, and if you meet someone on the street, they only see what they see on the screen. Mm-hmm. So they have no idea what you're like as a person. And I think that, you know, it's like being a Hollywood starlet. It's all-consuming.
Well, it's interesting. I've dated a few porn stars. Probably less than 10. And also known a lot of people in the business on both sides of the camera. You know, producers and cinematographers, mm-hmm. and you know, as well as the performers. And you're right. I have seen the entire spectrum of you know, people who are successful in the business, and it's clear what makes them successful. They manage to keep it to a distance, and then those that just get consumed by it and you know burn, like you said, they burn out quickly. And I've seen the full spectrum of that on both sides.
I worked with a fellow who did computers, and one of his clients was out in Chatsworth, and it was a fairly sizable porn company. And he was there one day working on their servers, and he kept hearing this man and woman on the phone, and they basically, their daughter was an up-and-coming, rising porn star, and they were making deals on the phone for what their daughter would or wouldn't do in all the movies coming up. And my little Southern upbringing, I was flabbergasted. I'm like, oh my God, that's like the most disgusting thing ever. He said, well, you know, maybe, but they're trying, number one, to capitalize on their daughter, but they're also trying to protect her. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Use and protect, I see, is two different things. But anyway, so I think the biggest thing is that's the day I learned about ATM. And that was a big thing she was selling at that moment. And it was like, oh, okie dokie. I don't think I'd want my mom and dad doing my negotiating.
Well, that is so many layers of a lot. So was the ATM something she would or would not do?
She would for the right price, but it had to be done artfully. It couldn't be a used scene or scenario. It had to be more on the loving kind, or it slipped in or whatever, but
that's,
it wasn't.
That's also in my contract.
It has to be loving. I appreciate you, George. I do.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I don't think that we can talk about porn stars, gay porn stars, without talking about Jeff Stryker.
I agree.
I saw him a few years ago in a one-man show.
Oh, is that the rock and roll show that he was doing?
Is that what they were calling it? I don't feel like it was very rock and roll.
So the rock and roll show was when he was still in the industry and he was trying to get his rock and roll career off the ground.
Oh, yeah.
So
this was not actually, that.
No, this was more of a, let's talk about my life in adult film. Yeah.
This was, let me come out and stand at a podium with a notebook and read for 30 minutes, fully dressed.
Oh.
And no one in the audience is like, this is not what we're here for. So then the show's over and the music starts and he comes back out on stage in a robe and he takes the robe off and then he's naked and he dances his way through the crowd. And so my friend that actually took me to the show, who's actually friends with Jeff, was so embarrassed because he came up behind him and then put his dick on his shoulder. So, you know, it was like a parrot in a pirate movie.
Does Polly want a cracker?
I mean, it is what made him money.
It's the only thing people were actually there to see. No one wants this soliloquy that you're going to read to us.
So I saw it was probably the same show, but it was a little different. The first half he came out, but he like sat on a cot like and was talking about his prison films and stuff. But then at the end, he came out in a robe, but he stood by the door.
So George probably saw the stage reading version of it, and you saw the actual.
Oh, maybe so. Maybe so.
That's what it sounds like to me.
But he stood at the door with the robe open with an erection, and as you would pass by to go, he'd say, "We thank you for coming out."
Okay, that's cute.
That's commitment right there.
Yes.
Well, you know, he's owning it. I got to respect him for that.
Yes, and I think I read recently that he just turned 60.
Good for him. Thank you, Jeff, for your service.
And isn't he in the documentary Circus of Books, I think? And yes. he does a cameo in that as well.
Yeah.
So, and then we have our very good friend Scotty, who is obsessed with Jeff Stryker.
So. Yeah, yes. And and the toys that Jeff produced.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, here's a big thing about that. So someone produced a replica of him and refused to pay him. And Jeff is one of the few adult actors who took a corporation to court here in Los Angeles. And at first the judge was like, "Oh, this is ludicrous." And Jeff and his attorney are like, "It's not ludicrous when it's my body you're selling and not giving me money for it." And it actually moved forward and he won his case.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Well, and I sort of danced around mine, but I will tell you that one of my favorites was Brent Corrigan.
Oh, honey.
he has Ooh, had some
scandalous,
some good times and some bad times. He's had a lot of ups and downs, but I saw some photos of him on Facebook the other day that he posted. He is absolutely just as handsome as he was when he was in adult film world. So I was like, good for you. He looks like he's living a good life.
I think he's still in the adult film world, but just on his own terms now. I think he has his own studio.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Or his own production house or production.
Well, I'm Googling whatever. Him, so I'll tell you in just a moment.
You know, sometimes that internet can be our very best friend.
See? I'll tell you everything you need to know about Mr. Corrigan.
Yes.
Yeah. He's the one
with the Sean Paul Lockhart.
Yeah. Yes. He's the one with the little star tattoos, right? Right, Dan?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Some of my friends in the film world.
Right.
I don't work at a studio, but I certainly have supported one or two in my
day. I mean, girl, you have bankrolled some shit.
I really think I should get a refund at some point.
Or at least a producer credit.
Oh, that's
well.
I tell you,
I don't really see an update here.
I don't know.
I don't see much past 2016.
I'm not sure. I know I think lives in Arizona, and in the pictures he's riding horses, which I see him riding a lot of horses and stuff. So
he does look good though. Here's something I'm looking at on Twitter from June. So he's looking great.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because we were talking about Jeff Stryker earlier. You know, he did have that cameo in the little documentary about Circus of Books. And, you know, the number of people our age, or let me say my age, who had so much smack to talk about him, like, "Oh, look how old he looks." I'm like, the man is 60 years old. He looks damn good.
What's he supposed to look like? I mean,
you can't look like you're 22 your entire life.
And the people that were saying this, what did they look like?
Well, most of them really should have kept their mouth buttoned. Only our friend Scotty was 100% behind Jeff. Or actually, he was in front of Jeff. But anyway.
You see.
Uh-huh. Backing up on it.
Hang on. Right. Poke your eye out, honey.
Should have torn the towel off the bathroom wall, honey. Okay. Anyway. Right. Oh, Lord have mercy.
Mm-mm-mm. Sometimes you just have to unhinge your jaw.
Well, you got to just figure it out, you know. That's the way it is.
Well, I am happy to report that while I should have had a producer credit, I will not be starring in any porn today or anytime in the future. So I'm really happy. I know that granny porn's a thing, but I'm not going to do it.
Well, now see.
I have.
I'm not counting it out yet. I'm just going to say that.
So, I'm pleading the fifth.
I want to talk about Tracy Lords. I really respected sort of what she's done and what she's made of her career now. Looking at where she's come from and what her path has been, she is kind of, she went from someone who, she basically went into someone who was used, and now she dictates her own future and she's making her own way. It's pretty amazing.
And, a lot of people who've been in the adult entertainment industry have been promised a role on television or movies or whatever. And this is only going to be temporary. This is a stepping stone. Right. And I think a lot of people in the adult industry get run over by the industry. They get used by the industry. That's unfortunately what happens in life. So it's not like you're going to an afternoon tea party.
It happens in the Hollywood business.
It happens in the entire world.
So that makes me wonder, obviously there's this whole concept of, especially in porn, like the casting couch. And I think, with the whole Me Too movement, we saw that that's not just in porn, that's in Hollywood, that's in Broadway, like that is a thing.
It's everywhere, right?
The Kevin Spacey of it all.
Yep.
But I have to think, I'm sure there's this idea that okay, well, you're here to be in a porn movie, so you can't have any standards, or you can't have any, you can't complain if I want to.
Right. The moment you take your clothes off, all your rights go away. And that is, it's just not true, but it's unfortunate that that is the perception from a lot of people.
Because I'm sure so many people who are in this profession, it's just that, it's a profession. It's a job. Yes. Yeah. It doesn't make me a person of loose moral standard, or it doesn't make me a whore or any of those things that I think there's this concept that it must, you must be a low person.
I know a woman in Miami who worked at a design firm, and she made X dollars. Let's say she made $10 an hour. Doesn't matter the number. She met a woman who was stripping for a living. And this woman was bringing home about $50 or $60 an hour based on a 40-hour work week. She was bringing home a boatload of cash. And this woman I knew quit her job, and she stripped for the next 4 years and paid for college in full. And when she left college, she had not only a degree, she also had no debt. Wow. And she said, yes, I know a lot of people frowned on me, but I got something they didn't get. I got a debt-free college.
She plotted her own path.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And there's a lot of stories out there like that about people who pay their way through college doing exactly that. I mean, porn is basically, I did pull some numbers for this, but porn is, as of 2022, it's a $1.1 billion industry.
Wow.
And what's amazing is since 2017, that business on average every year jumps about 15% every year. It increases over itself. And that's pretty staggering, that amount of money in the industry. And it's also sad how many people in this career, especially in their early days of their career, are being taken advantage of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that is, we can sit here and we can say you own it, you can control your path. But people do get lost. It can be a dark, dark place, because it takes a strong person to survive something that, most of us have been told all our entire lives is wrong.
Yeah.
And terrible.
Yeah, it's an awful, awful thing. And there's some echoes to be made, some comparisons to be made with that and Hollywood industry as well. And you see a lot of that. But it's exactly what you say, George, in that we've been told since a very early age that looking at someone who is taking off their clothes is wrong, right? And in some instances it could be, but I'm not here to argue that point. But we've been taught that pornography or sex in general is a bad, bad thing. And then you turn on a camera, set up, some movie lights and stuff, and suddenly you have no morals. You're a degenerate. And it's a sad state of affairs.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, I compare it to like all these people who talk about, oh, you know, the drugs come across the border and they just flood in and flood in. I'm like, but somebody here in the U.S. is doing the drugs.
There's a business for it, or otherwise it wouldn't come.
Right. If it's a $1.1 billion industry, somebody is buying it to make it a $1.1 billion industry. And maybe I should rethink that granny porn comment from earlier, because I could use some of them billions.
That's why I said I ain't ruled it out yet, honey.
But here's the thing, too. Like, you looking for some stock to invest in? Girl, mm-hmm. OnlyFans, buy some stock.
It is. I on the periphery through one of my clients, I know someone in the industry, and they are very well to do. And they invest with this particular client of mine. And it's they invest a lot of money because they make a lot of money, and they've been doing it for a very long time. It's not a new industry, and it's not it's actually a production studio. I mean, it's a full-fledged thing. So
it's a business.
It's a business, and it's like everything else. While there are a lot of people who say, oh, I would never, you know, what goes on behind closed doors, honey? I don't know what you really are doing, whether it's a never or not. And if it's a $1.1 billion, there's a whole lot of people saying yes.
Somebody is. Yep, exactly.
And I have said yes more than one time myself.
Now see.
You know, I've supported.
Well, on that note, I feel like I should probably go and, you know, show some support.
There may still be time to download.
To some of those up-and-coming actors.
Well, I will remind you again with two words. Colby Keller.
Is that with K's or C's?
It's a C and then a K, honey.
A C and a K.
C-K.
Love it. I love it.
Daddy's searching now. There
you go. I'm going to make a cocktail and go talk to Colby up close.
She got the phone out, honey.
The phone.
All right, y'all. This was fun. I mean, it was a very interesting follow-up to last week's, but lighthearted is good.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that, because I did want to take a minute to actually give an update from last week. So for anybody that heard last week's story about the kid, Mark, who was suffering from bullying from his church and his community, there have been some updates that have been posted on our social, and we are working on getting some time with the author of the column that wrote that column, James Finn. So hopefully we'll have him on to give us a real life in person update. But yes. It sounds like Mark and his family are in the process of moving away from that community into a much safer community.
Yes.
So I'm very excited to say that that seems to all be working out.
Yes, I think I even saw the words PFLAG.
I think I saw that too.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
That's a great thing. Yep. I'm so happy to hear that.
And, you know, if you guys have any suggestions about this week's topic that we should be checking out, either, you know, maybe you'll DM us and let us know who is popular on your radar.
Oh, that's true. Who are your favorites?
Yeah. Bring it. All right. Well, over to Jake to take us home. We'll see y'all next week.
See you next week.
See ya.
Queer Magnolias is a weekly podcast hosted by Rick Clifton, Danny White, and George Skinner. You can find us everywhere you find your podcasts, so please take a few minutes to leave a rating or review. We definitely look forward to hearing from you. If this is your first time joining us, please subscribe to receive the next episode automatically. Thank you for following us on Twitter at Queer Magnolias, and on Instagram at Queer Magnolias Podcast. Or you can email us at queermagnoliaspodcast@gmail.com.